Good afternoon and welcome to 2020 with Senate Hess. Today is Monday, January 27th. This is the first meeting of the year. We're calling this meeting to order at 1:31 p.m. We're meeting today in room 205 of the Capitol Building. Please, as a courtesy, silence your cell phones. Committee members present today are Senator Von Imhoff, Senator Giesel, Senator Begich, and we're expecting Senator Schauer. There has been some recent changes to the committee makeup. We want to welcome Senator Schauer to the committee and Senator Von Imhoff, who was with us last session. Who will be serving as our current vice chair. We also want to reintroduce our committee aides, Jody Simpson, our staff here, and Senate Records Jenny Froy, and are assisting us today with the teleconferencing is Brett. And we also welcome Senator Schauer to the committee. Before the committee this afternoon, we have House Bill 96, Pioneer Homes and Veteran Homes Rates, by Representative Zach Fields. This is our first time hearing my bill. We'll hear a brief explanation from the bill sponsor, then we'll take public testimony, and my intent is to hold this bill over to allow the department to give a little bit more review, which will be coming up later this week. Clinton Lastly, the Acting Deputy Commissioner for Family, Community, and Integrated Services, will be available here in the in person to ask any be available for questions in person. Members, please note an updated PowerPoint and the two refresh fiscal notes. At that time, we want to ask Representative Fields and his staff, who will provide, and Tristan Walsh to the table to provide an overview of legislation and sexual analysis, and to answer any questions from committees. You may begin when you're taking a brief at ease. And Representative Fields, as you go through the PowerPoint, it'd be helpful for the committee when you go to the next slide, just tell us what slide number you're on, as are having some technical difficulties here with some technology today. Seems to be at the back of the building. And you may proceed.
Thank you, Chairman Wilson. For the record, Zach Fields, House District 20, and my staff person, Tristan Walsh. Slide 2, there are three goals of House Bill 96, maintain the Pioneer Homes in Alaska's historic commitment to our elders, provide revenue and financial stability for the homes, and provide some certainty and predictability to both residents and the department about the trajectory of rates in the future. Slide 3. The committee substitute for House Bill 96, the Finance Committee substitute that passed the House, does take into account inflation since 2004. Prior to the recent very steep rate increases, the real value of rates had not kept pace with inflation for several years. So our bill looks back and says, if we were going to take into account inflation going back to 2004, what would that look like? And that establishes a new baseline for rates, recognizing that costs do increase over time.
Are you finished with the slide? Representative Field, if you can go through the end of the slide.
Sure.
And then we'll just take a pause there for questions through end of each slide.
Yes, sir. Consistent with with the legislature's broad look at Medicaid reform and Senate Bill 74 and the subsequent very comprehensive Agnew-Beck report, House Bill 96 adds levels 4 and 5 so that there are 5 levels of care in the Pioneer Homes going forward, which is important for an aging population and additional needs for dementia care. The committee substitute also uses the Social Security rate of inflation as the best attempt to take into account changes in costs, and the bill passed 35-4 in the House of Representatives late last session.
Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Fields, when I looked at the CS and then compared it to your House bill, there were different rates between the two, so Finance made some changes to the rates. If you could just kind of walk us through the rationale of the Finance Committee and give us your thoughts on, you know, where you were with the rates. What was your rationale for the original rates you proposed, and right. Are you comfortable with the rates that came out of the House body? Those are the questions.
Yes. I am definitely supportive of the rates as addressed in House Finance. They're a little bit more modest than the rates that I originally introduced, but they actually directly line up with inflation-adjusted rates since 2004. The earlier higher rates, I think we heard from the public as the bill went through both State Affairs and Health and Social Services, that there was strong support for keeping rates at an inflation-adjusted level and having that be a predictable trajectory in the future. So we listened as it went through the committee process.
Please continue.
Slide 4. I think probably all the committee members are very familiar with this, but as I was thinking about the bill, it just struck me that generations of Alaskans have invested in the Pioneer Homes going back to 1913 with the first home, which was originally created as a home for indigent men in the territory. Again, many generations of Alaskans worked on expanding the system, including a colleague of mine in the House who helped establish the first veterans home in Palmer. The home was there, but getting that veteran certification was a really important step for a state with the highest population of per capita, highest population of veterans in the country. 592 people were residents of the home at least at one point in time in 2019, and there is some turnover. Currently, the Pioneer Home rates are adjusted by regulation, and I think that's an opportunity where we have some room for improvement with additional stability, since rate increases have been irregular and in some cases pretty dramatic. We have this problem where rates tend not to keep pace with inflation, and then I would argue the state overcorrected a little bit with very steep rate increases. Next slide to slide 5. So when you look at the current resident population, the payer source, we actually have a lot of residents who are private payers, and they pay a significant amount of the real cost of providing care, but not the entire cost of providing the care. Since the rate increases have gone into effect, you've seen a noticeable decline in the number of private payers. And one of the things that I've thought about with the bill and that the House Finance Committee looked at is, how do we maintain a healthy payer mix to ensure financial stability for the homes and to ensure that folks going into the homes are representative of Alaskans writ large? Next slide. These are some details on the proposed costs under the CS for House Bill 96. Level 1, $2,900 a month. Level 2, nearly $5,400. Level 3, $7,800. And level 4, $8,500. I want to note level 5 under this bill is not capped, because those very complex behavioral health needs, which are going to be provided in a physically separated part of the Pioneer Homes, are not going to be paid out of pocket because they're so high. And this gets back to, where does this bill fit into the broader attempt to control health care costs, control Medicaid costs, and save money for the state? So when those behavioral health wings are operational, over time it should allow some folks who may currently have to be housed at API to be housed at the Pioneer Homes instead. And that actually saves the state a significant amount of money, because the cost of housing people with those complex behavioral health needs at the Pioneer Home, for those who are appropriate, is significantly cheaper than at API. And I think the Agnew-Beck report did a good job at looking at what is the Pioneer Home's role in this broader attempt to find financial sustainability for our healthcare system. I in a future slide, we'll look at kind of what are market rates for long-term care and how do the Pioneer Homes fit into it.
Okay. Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. So, Representative Fields, the question I have is, what's the maximum amount that Medicaid will pay, regardless of the acuity, per person?
Through the chair, great question. And I have the exact figure in here. The Medicaid rate for eligible recipients in the Pioneer Home is called a residential supported living rate, and it is $162.70. There is also a potential RSL acuity add-on of $359.58. My understanding is that at this time, no residents actually receive that. So when you do the math on that $162 rate, under either House Bill 96 or the department's currently enacted rates, we're going to be getting all of those federal receipts. So we're not losing out on potential federal revenue by going to a more modest set of rates.
So follow-up?
Follow-up.
So repeat that. You said 196. Is that a day or is that a?
$162.70 daily rate.
Daily. Okay. So what is that? What is that a month? What is that compared to the $53.96 or $78.14?
If my math is correct through the chair, that's $4,881 per month.
Okay. So, thank you.
Please continue.
All right. So Representative Fields, if a patient or I guess a resident is level 3 or level 4. There's a gap. And so there's a variety of different ways to fill that gap. Maybe it could be private insurance. Maybe it could be their private pay. Perhaps it's state funds. What is the incentive then for the Pioneer Homes to take level 3s and level 4s versus sticking with level 1s and level 2s where most of the costs are covered? And not wanting to incur gaps for level 3s, 4s, and let alone level 5s, knowing that the fundraising for those gaps is very difficult.
Through the chair, as I recall, when the bill progressed to the House, the Pioneer Home division director testified that the Pioneer Homes admit Alaskans without regard to ability to pay. And I have an old report here that I can share with the committee produced for Representative Boyer back in 1988, and it actually looked at the historic practice of admitting Alaskans without regard to ability to pay. So as I recall from this report, that's actually not in statute, interestingly, but is such a long-standing practice. And perhaps it has been placed in statute since this report was written, but that's been the practice for a long time.
Yeah.
So thank you. So through the chair, I guess I just want to be assured that the Pioneer Homes will accept, and my guess is that there's probably a waiting room for all 5 acuities. I don't think there would be a gap. Of course, I'll be wait to hear the testimony here to address that. But I think it's important for the Pioneer Home to take all levels of care if that's the direction that they're going. My only concern is that even if there's just a finite number of beds for 3, 4, and 5, what's to stop those costs from going up more and more and more faster than what the Medicaid daily coverage is? Is there a way to keep a lid on things? How do you do that? How do you make sure that the gap doesn't widen more than CPI each year?
Through the chair, that is a great question, and I think it begs kind of a broader look at the financial situation with the Pioneer Homes, where I think we have an interest in a healthy mix of individuals, some of whom are self-pay, and inevitably some aren't going to be able to be self-pay. Some are going to be 100% on payment assistance, particularly as they progress to higher levels of care and are forced to liquidate their savings to pay for that care. So that's number one, is there's both the rate for an individual, but then there's the question of what's your population in the homes. And I think a healthy mix is good for the residents and it's good for the financial situation in the homes. There's also an element, I think, of historic practice to that answer. My understanding, and I would defer to the division leadership, but my understanding is that some of these homes, if not all of them, used to be certified as nursing homes. Most of them don't qualify because of physical constraints. A lot of these are older buildings. They don't have the necessary doorway width and so on. And if you were to undertake the process of renovating all of them, it would be a very significant capital expense to make them eligible for nursing home level reimbursement, which are much higher reimbursement rates. So I think the question of could the department look at nursing home level reimbursement rates for certain homes that maybe are newer and have more modern doorway widths and so on, would that allow the department to capture a higher reimbursement rate of federal dollars and actually cover the cost of care? That's a really good question for the department. I know it's one they've looked at over time.
And also for the record, I just also want to mention that Senator Gray Jackson has been with us since the beginning of the committee. I apologize for that oversight. Senator Giesel and Senator Begich.
So, Representative Fields, could you clarify for me the reimbursement that you quoted, was that Medicaid or Medicare?
That is the Medicaid RSL, or Residential Supported Living Rate.
So these residents also receive Medicare benefits generally. Do you know, my understanding from personal exposure to this is that folks come in typically with Medicare. Some of them have private insurance also, and of course their own assets. And when they can no longer meet the cost with those payment forms, they then, in addition, go on Medicaid.
I apologize. I was seeing if we had a slide with, through the chair, I was seeing if we had a slide that broke down the payer mix. But so February 2019, in an attempt to answer your question, in February 2019, there were 496 licensed beds, 451 of which were filled. You probably recall I cited a higher number because we had some turnover in those beds. And as of February 2019, 51% of people were private pay, 20% were Medicaid waiver, that's that residential support living rate, and 29% were on payment assistance, essentially state subsidized care. I don't have the numbers for Medicare, and we'll have to defer to the department.
Thank you. I'll hold that question for the director of the division. I suspect they might know. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Two questions. The first relates to the comment you just made, some capital improvements you indicated because our homes are not nursing home certifiable, but could mean that we could draw the much more substantive rate. And I'm just curious, did your office or has anyone done, to your knowledge, done an analysis of the difference between if we did do some capital projects, would they in fact pay for themselves fairly quickly in time, in which case a little money up front to ensure that we have more consistent money in the long run might make a lot of sense. Has anybody done that to your knowledge, that analysis?
We've inquired with the department about this broader question of nursing home rates, but I don't think we've asked that specific question of what's the ROI, and that's a great question that we should follow up with the department.
Yeah, I'd be real curious about that, Mr. Chairman. And then, Mr. Chairman, the second question I had just goes to one of the purposes of the bill, and I've struggled with the monetary numbers. When the initial proposal came from the administration, the amounts, of course, went up so dramatically that one of the thoughts I had was about 50% of our population is private payer. Is that about right?
Through the chair, that is correct.
Yeah. So if we wipe out the private payer's ability to cover their costs while they're still relatively early in their time in the Pioneer's home, that means 100% of the costs when they are, in fact, less able and when, in fact, they might have higher costs end up being fully the burden of the state at that point because you're not going to throw them out of the home. Is that correct?
Through the chair, that is correct.
So what I'm curious, and maybe I'll ask this question for the director, the acting director, or whoever's going to be up before us from the division, is what analysis has been done of the impact of those rates? Because I'm curious. I have a feeling the approach that you're taking here with this bill will allow those private payers to continue to pay as they become, you know, more in need of services, so that burden wouldn't entirely fall on the state, and so it would perhaps hold costs down. So I just want to hear more about that at some point in the presentation, if I can.
Through the chair, I think it's accurate to assume that doing the right thing for our elders and helping them stay in the homes is also what's actually in the financial best interests of the homes and of the system. And We actually made a somewhat late addition to invited testimony. Former Ledge Finance Director David Teal provided some testimony on this subject in House Finance, and I just asked if he could be available today in the interest of continuity if members had questions about these economic dynamics that I think admittedly are hard to predict with certainty.
Senator Giesel.
So Representative Fields, we talked about this a little bit in my office, but we both know of folks, married couples, one of the spouses not needing the Pioneer Home, the other is. And so the assets of that couple get spent down quite rapidly with excessively high fees, leaving the non-Pioneer Home resident, frankly, destitute. And so have you looked at how to fix that that issue so that we're not draining the assets of a person that is not a resident to maintain their spouse or other family member?
Through the chair, thank you for that question. And certainly some of these tragic stories, and I've heard them in my district, were a primary motivation for working on this bill. But I think you're right that actually there's the potential to do more as we look at how does payment assistance work and how does it work for a married couple versus a single person, and how do we make sure that we're not unwittingly putting someone in a place where they might have to not have home, not be able to take care of their kids. I know that I've heard from constituents in my district who married couple, one is in the Pioneer Home, the one who's not also helps take care of younger kids because of family medical situations, and I just think that we as a state don't want to be in a position of effectively punishing someone, someone's spouse for saving money and for trying to do right by their other family members. Sorry, I got off on the slides to see if we had the graph up there to look at the payer mix. So I think we're on slide 7 and just wanted to make sure committee members had an overview of the different levels of care. The department is moving to 5 levels of care, again, consistent with the direction under Senate Bill 74 from several years ago. And again, House Bill 96 recognizes and would be consistent with that. I think it's important to note over time, the population of the Pioneer Homes, when you look at a 30, 40-year time horizon, the average age of Pioneer Home residents has increased significantly, and the percentage of residents who have dementia has increased as well. The need for a higher level of care has increased, and the homes are evolving to meet that need. I wanted to provide a comparison for rates that predated the recent rate increase, rates that are in place now with the new rates enacted through regulation, and rates under House Bill 96. So the blue bar is, I guess, the status quo ante, what was there before the recent rate hike. The orange bar represents the new rates, and the green bar is what would be represented by the CS for House Bill 96. And again, the green bar is inflation-adjusted 2004 rates. So again, we do take into account some cost increases over the last decade and a half. On the right is a newspaper story from the ADN that came out after the rate increases went into effect, and I believe we've had about 16 level one residents who have unfortunately made the decision to leave following the recent rate increases. And I know because some of them are constituents, some of them were in the situation that the Senate President mentioned with one spouse not in the Pioneer Homes. Moving on to slide 9.
Senator Von Neumann.
So, thank you. So through the chair, Representative Fields, you have rates. So I just want to be sure the orange is enacted monthly rates that were enacted last year.
Through the chair, that's correct.
And then the green is your proposed here. Now, these are the rates in terms of reimbursement. What are the costs?
The costs as through the chair, the costs as stated by the department are the same as the orange bars.
Senator Bonifa.
So thank you. So through the chair, Senator Wilson, the cost then is the fiscal note the arbitrage, the difference between the green and the orange, basically?
Through the chair, I believe so, and that's what I recall from the discussions in the House, is that the department assumes basically that they're going to collect the rates they charge from. Yes.
Okay, so then one last question.
Yes.
Thank you, Senator Wilson. So through the chair, again, to kind of reiterate my question before, how can we determine, I guess via audit, you alluded to Agnew-Beck, that $11,185, $13,333, and $15,000 are, in fact, not only the cost, but again, the value. I mean, the cost of something is the cost of something, but is it giving us good value? The cost of a box of Kleenex, is it $2 or is it $6? And so what's being charged as a cost, we want to make sure that, number one, those costs don't inflate extremely each year after year, and that there's actually a good value. And I don't know if that's a comparison to other Pioneer Homes within the state, other Pioneer Home-like type of facilities down in the lower 48. If there's a comparison over time, I don't know.
Through the chair, with your indulgence, I think I might try to answer that question by going to the next slide and referencing some regional comparisons.
Yes, but before you do,
yes.
I think Senator Begich may have a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to clarify on the fiscal note, doesn't it reflect also the difference between a capped and an uncapped rate at the end there? Because, of course, the $15,000 amount is a capped rate under the existing scenario, but that under the uncapped rate, that limit wouldn't be there, so the department might be projecting higher fiscal costs without necessarily knowing them.
Through the chair, suffice to say there was considerable discussion in House Finance about kind of how real is the fiscal note and how much money is the department actually going to collect, and I guess my conclusion is that there was and there is a considerable amount of uncertainty about, you know, when you basically put prices that are very high above market levels, how do consumers react to that? So I might defer to both the department and to Mr. Teal about kind of further discussion of that rather than try to put words in their mouths.
Mr. Chairman, that to me is kind of the crux of it. You know, we did an analysis some years ago on a bill around one of the various Medicaid bills. I think it was a work requirement bill. And after, while I opposed the bill, for the president of the Senate at the time, I did a review of that bill and discovered that there were some discrepancies in terms of the fiscal note, which I shared with the president of the Senate at the time, that they were minor, but they represented a couple million dollars. So I just, when I see a fiscal note that's in the, you know, $60, $70 million range, I just have some questions about what philosophically is going on here and whether or not it's, you know, whether it's fact, I believe it's all fact-based, but what level of fact-based it is. And so I look forward to that discussion.
And we can ask the Acting Deputy Commissioner may possibly give a brief explanation on that. Yeah. I don't want to go too deep into that detail. Is that for another committee?
Fair enough.
Slide 9. So returning to Senator Von Imhoff's question about value, you know, if you're just looking for the cheapest assisted living, the Pioneer Home is not the cheapest assisted living now, and it's not going to be the cheapest assisted living in the future. I think that experience shows that a significant number of Alaskans value the quality of care and the sense of community in the Pioneer Homes, and they will pay some more for that, what I think consumers perceive as a higher quality of care and a real commitment to the residents by the staff. And how much more will they pay? I think it's reasonable to assume that demand is not utterly elastic. In other words, you can't necessarily double or triple the price and expect people to still buy a given good or service, even if it is somewhat better than the competition. So I guess my best attempt at answering your question is the Pioneer Home's value is certainly more than kind of a run-of-the-mill assisted living facility that you might contemplate sending, say, your parents to out of state. And I also want to – sorry.
Go ahead.
I guess another conclusion I want to draw from this slide is that if the rates in House Bill 96 were to be enacted, we are definitely not underpricing the private market for assisted living, either in Alaska or in the region. We're not going to be distorting the market that way. People are still going to be paying a little bit of a premium for that higher level care. The other factor here is the Pioneer Homes don't provide enough beds on a statewide basis to distort the market. You're looking at 450 beds roughly at one time, perhaps a little over 500 people a year. You know, a community like Sitka, the Pioneer Homes represent a significant number of long-term care beds, but taken statewide, they represent a pretty small percentage, and in a community like Anchorage or Fairbanks, they represent a pretty small percentage.
And on that, I have a question. You know, Alaska, we Alaskans, we pay the most healthcare costs in the world. And with that, some can argue, we've had this conversation in this committee before, upon whether the Pioneer Home is really a skilled nursing home facility or provide skilled nursing home facility types of services. And do you feel that the rates that you've had going have projected with your cost of increased living population base also reflects the cost of healthcare increase in our state over that same time period from 2004 until today? Because I think that is where we get in sort of this cost of services in terms of the Pioneer Home, because it is, for some residents, it is assisted living home, but for others, it's a skilled nursing facility.
Right. Well, I believe the costs of healthcare in Alaska have grown faster than the cost of providing long-term care in the Pioneer Homes. So I think the good news is that cost escalation has not happened as rapidly as in healthcare at large. One of the things that I find interesting is that our Medicaid costs have actually gotten more under control, especially on a per capita basis going back to 2015. So I think there's a difference in healthcare costs in Alaska, say from 2000 to 2015, relative to 2015 to the present. And I think it probably shows the legislature has been doing some good work, including with Senate Bill 74, trying to get our arms around Medicaid costs and trying to drive down uncompensated care, which in turn passes on cost savings to private insurers like the state itself. So, you know, we've seen better coverage of the population at large translate into us bearing less of that burden to cover uncompensated care.
Senator Vandenhoff?
Thank you. What I just see here is that Anchorage, the comparison between assisted living and nursing home, obviously nursing homes cost more in any location, but in Anchorage and in Alaska, it looks 2 to 3 times more, at least twice as much as Seattle and Portland. So besides the fact that I do acknowledge and agree with you that there's a need for nursing home, it is significantly more costly here in Alaska. So if we're going to be moving the Pioneer Home into the nursing home field, what does that mean? And I guess the question is where are people getting their nursing home assistance now?
Right, through the chair, great observation. And just to be clear, I'm not suggesting that the Pioneer Home kind of consciously moved into providing a concentration of a higher acuity level of care. That's actually one of my concerns with the bill, is that inadvertently we're going to provide a higher level of care for a larger percentage of the population, which puts us in a risky financial situation. I think it's good to have some percentage of level one and level two payers in the Pioneer Home. That's good for the homes. You know, your question about, so Anchorage and Alaska, those are private facilities. And I think it's kind of interesting that the Pioneer Homes provide care that potentially in some homes could qualify for nursing home levels of reimbursement, so we could harvest more revenue. And yet when you look at the cost, perhaps one could conclude that the department has actually done a good job controlling the cost, since the Pioneer Home rates are not nearly as high as the nursing home rates. But it's really hard to compare apples to apples, because in the Pioneer Home you have populations of people who are definitely assisted living and a significant percentage of the population who, maybe in the absence of a Pioneer Home, would have to look for nursing home care probably outside of Alaska. And that makes it really hard to compare with that diversity of population in the homes.
Senator Baggage.
Thank you.
Sorry, unless you have a follow-up.
That's all good. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I mean, it's just kind of a follow-up for me. Do we know why the, I mean, Portland has nearly, it looks like about a, near 13,000, about 11,000 in Portland, and yet it's 30,000 for private nursing home care up here. You know, what is, what are the reasons for the higher level of private nursing home care? Is it because it's a narrow market with few players, and so they charge a higher premium? Is there actual costs related to that? So that goes back to Senator Von Imhoff's earlier question about it, what is the cost versus what can somebody get from the market? I mean, I certainly don't want to raise the price of the Pioneer Home to meet a market that's been, you know, perhaps inflated by the ability to ask for the money as opposed to the actual cost.
Right.
So do you, have you done any kind of analysis of that? Can you give us some guidance?
I would defer to Director Lasley. Through the chair, I would defer to Director Lasley for additional background on the Genworth report. I guess my primary takeaway from this graph, I was actually looking at more at assisted living than nursing home, because that's technically what the Pioneer Homes are, and just personally wanted to have assurance that we weren't distorting the market by radically underpricing in the area of assisted living.
Please continue.
So I mentioned earlier, we're on slide 10 here, that we would, that this bill would take into account changes in cost of providing care based on inflation, and I put the numbers up here just to show that that really adds up over time, and if you take it into account, you're going to have a more steady trajectory to capture those cost increases and provide predictability for residents in the department. Moving on to slide 11, to summarize, this bill provides stability for residents in the department. It ensures timely and predictable rate increases, and I want to note that this bill actually gives the department the ability to change rates without going through the longer process and regulation where you have to advertise, take public comment, and so on, because we observed that that process had obviously discouraged the department from adjusting rates to keep pace with costs, so we wanted to provide for more timely and predictable rate increases. Of course, it's a goal to provide peace of mind for residents and for their family members who really make tough decisions about where and how to take care of the elder members of their family. And the bill does provide updated levels of care to reflect an aging population with a higher percentage of residents with dementia. I really appreciate the opportunity to present the bill to the committee and for your work on this important subject.
Thank you. Any questions from the bill sponsor before we have invited testimony? Okay. Seeing or hearing none, thank you, Rep. Fields. I believe for invited testimony, if we want to start with David Teal. Mr. Teal, for the record, you know the procedures.
I do. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm David Teal. Many of you know me as Director of Legislative Finance. I'm not in that position anymore, so I am speaking as a private citizen at the request of the bill sponsor, who did not ask me to testify for or against this bill. It was more to let the committee know about the discussions in House Finance Committee. And in House Finance, it was kind of a mixture of the governor's bill and this bill, which was a response to it. They were both up at about the same time. Ledge Finance, as we looked at the fiscal impacts, had a concern about the lack of data, particularly financial data of the residents and those on the waiting list. And that was prompted the next concern, which is that the fiscal impacts might be more optimistic than what might really happen. That's based on this chain of events, that a rate increase, particularly a large increase at the level one care, which as you know, is little to no assistance. Those people have options, including simply staying in an apartment or a home. So we were concerned that given the rate increase, it was possible that some of those residents self-paying or full pay would opt to leave looking for a cheaper place to stay. We had no idea how many would do that because of the lack of data, but we suspected that it would occur, and based on some information that Director Lasley, at the time director, provided to us, we estimated that the savings projected by the governor were perhaps $5 million too aggressive. Rumor has it that there will be a $5 million supplemental. Don't think that we were geniuses in any way because of that lucky guess, because I think it, given the lack of data, it was truly a speculative guess. And I think you'll see a request in now in 21 for additional funding, because level one in particular, people have elected to leave. And of course, if they leave and are replaced by people who are not full pay, then the program receipts simply don't materialize. So we weren't looking at it particularly from the personal aspects, which certainly affect matter. We were strictly looking at it as, do the fiscal projections make sense? And given the lack of data, and I think what seemed like an obvious potential chain of events, we were concerned that they were being too optimistic on savings, as I said, and that given the lack of data, caution was warranted in both increasing the rates and projecting the impact of increasing those rates. So that's really all I have to say. That's what happened in House Finance. I haven't kept up on the bill or the testimony here, so I have nothing to say about the rates, and I know there's more data available now, but I still don't think it's sufficient to really make good projections on the balance of revenue and costs.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Teal? Yeah. Thank you for gracing us with your appearance today, sir.
Thank you.
And also, as we're going through the year, I'm going to ask Brett Fields to come back up, because I'm getting back in the swing of things. I think it's my first committee of the year, too, attending. But we forgot to go through over your sectional. I don't want to forget those important details here for the public or for committee members.
Okay, my staff is through the. My staff is going to pull that up. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Sorry, for the record, Tristan Walsh, staff to Representative Fields. So you should have.
Yes, in your baggage.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a real quick question based on David's testimony. I just have a question. In your graph, which shows the comparison of the different communities with the rates, the assisted living rates. Of course, there are two different levels, that level one, level two, and I guess some of level three falls into the category of assisted living. Is that? I just want to be sure I understand.
Through the chair,
because you have a number here, 7126, for Pioneers Home, and I want to know where that number comes from, because it's not one of the three numbers I have in the level one, level two, level three. And is it supposed to represent your bill, or is it supposed to represent the current rate?
Through the chair, Senator Begich. This, for the record, this is Tristan Walsh, staff to Representative Fields. If you're referring to slide five,
slide on page nine. Exactly. Comparison across communities: Seattle, Portland, Anchorage, Alaska, Pioneers Home, assisted living rate 7,126, nursing home rate 14,167. I'm just curious.
Through the chair, Senator Begich. This slide was produced by the Department of Pioneer Homes, and they refer to the enacted rates that were put into place in August as an average.
And through the chair, Zach Fields, yes, the average of 1 through 3 for the left bar and 4 and 5 for the right bar, trying to approximate what is assisted living level care within the Pioneer Homes versus what is more nursing home level care within the homes.
That's all. And so it's not your bills rates, which would actually be slightly lower than that.
Correct. Yeah. Correct.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Through the chair, just for the record, this is Tristan Walsh, staff representative Fields. The committee members should have the sectional analysis for version S in front of them. And if it pleases the committee, I'll walk you through it. This bill has 7 sections. Section 1 amends AS 4755020B, the statute regarding admission of a Pioneer home, to raise the amount of monthly income a resident may keep for incidental expenses, commonly referred to as their allowance, from $200, which was set in 2011, I believe, to $500. It also makes conforming language to reflect new language added in Section 5, which I'll touch on in a minute. And this was an amendment that was offered in the House Finance Committee. Section 2 amends AS 4755020D, the section of statutes relating to payment assistance, to raise the month. Excuse me, that was a repetition. That's apologies, my fault. I believe I have a typo in my sectional analysis here. Section 3.
Senator Baggage?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think you actually don't. That's one's for Section B and one's for Section D. I think they both do the same thing. I think that they both do roughly the same thing. They're just two different sections of the bill. That's what I understood.
Thank you, Senator. I appreciate it. Section 3 amends AS 4755030A, the section relating to payment by a resident, with conforming language that reflects Section 5 of this bill. Section 4 repeals and enacts AS 4755030B, which charges the department to adopt regulations regarding the monthly rate for Pioneer Home residents to reflect changes made in Section 5. And then Section 5 amends AS 4755030 by adding a new section, F. This section works to adjust to limit Pioneer Home rate increases to no more than the rate of inflation as measured by the Social Security cost of living adjustment using the current monthly and daily rates adjusted from 2004 as a baseline or a starting point. Section 6 amends AS 4755070, the statute regarding indebtedness to a home resident to the state, with conforming language to reflect changes made in Section 5. And Section 7 is also conforming changes, repealing sections of statutes requiring public notice for proposed rate changes, which would be in the past done through the regulatory process. Section 5 sets this as an annual process, meaning it is limited to once a year. And this is where Representative Fields noted that this allows the department to enact the rate increases through statutory authority.
Senator Baggage?
Just a very quick question. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Are the allowances also then under, because of the reference to Section 5, they also get inflation-proofed? Or do we have to revisit the allowances every few years and reset them?
Through the chair, Senator Baggage, I believe that these are set as a single increase here, but we can also check with Marie Marks if it would please the committee.
Thank you.
Any other questions on the sectional analysis? Thank you, Representative Fields. This time, if we can call up Acting Deputy Commissioner Lassley to come on up. And I believe there are a few questions and comments throughout the committee, and we can ask senators to repeat some of those questions and comments. I know that the department is going to be before us on Wednesday, too, so feel free to. If you need more time to get back to the committee and come back to us, you can do that too on Wednesday as well.
For the record, Clinton Lassley, Acting Deputy Commissioner for Health and Social Services.
And I think the person who had the questions for you stepped out of the room. But. Yes, Senator Geisel.
you. I did have a question that I thought Deputy Commissioner could possibly address. So the payment, a citizen enters, they have personal assets to pay for their residency. They also have Medicare, right? They use up all those personal assets. It is my understanding that at that time, while they still have Medicare, they would be asked to apply for and receive Medicaid to help cover those costs. Could you clarify all that?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Giesel. Elders in the Pioneer Home don't qualify for Medicare. I mean, they have Medicare A, B, but the Pioneer Homes can't accept Medicare. We are able to receive Medicaid waiver because Medicare is hospitalization, and so we receive the Medicaid waiver coverage. And so individuals that are in the home, whenever, you know, Medicaid waiver has financial and medical requirements in order to become eligible. So you must meet the financial, be basically below resources, and then you also must meet the what they call nursing home level of care in order to be eligible for Medicaid waiver. So in the homes currently, we have 96 elders out of the 450 elders in the homes that qualify for Medicaid waiver, and they have met both of those criteria. And so, you know, whenever we really try to sort of shape the program around the Medicaid waiver requirements, because individuals at some point, we know that they're going to have a higher level of care and they're going to require Medicaid waiver or assistance. And there's very strict financial requirements behind that.
A follow-up, Senator Giesel?
So Medicare would cover their medications. Is that a fact?
Through the chair, Senator Giesel. Right, their Part D plan would cover, and we do require every elder moving into the home, they must have Medicare Part D or equivalent.
Thank you.
Deputy Commissioner, when were the new regulations and the rates increase active for the current residents?
Chairman Wilson, the new rates went into effect September 1. The notification went out the end of July, which made them effective 30 days thereafter.
Okay. And with that, and if you don't have the numbers now, if you can get back to the committee on this, can you tell us about how many folks weren't able to have financial hardships, the numbers of the folks that were provided additional assistance from the state, and the folks that left? If you had those statistics, that would be wonderful if you could provide those to the committee.
Yeah. Chairman Wilson, so in our House Finance presentation last week, we talked a little bit about giving some of the statistics around how many individuals moved out of the Pioneer Homes directly related to the rate increase, and we've been tracking that ever since we announced the rate increase. So there's been 16 individuals that moved out of the Pioneer Homes and stated that they were moving out directly because of the rate increase. Of those 16, the majority, I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but the majority are in the Anchorage or the Ball area, Anchorage, Palmer, Wasilla. Some of those individuals have moved into some of the new facilities opening. So as you know, there's three new facilities that have opened in the last year between Anchorage, Palmer, and Wasilla. And so they've moved to those locations.
And would they also offer the status? Can you explain a little bit more about that additional, was it $15 million that goes into that pot of money for folks who may not be able to financially afford the rate increase?
Yeah, Chairman Wilson, we have had conversations with everyone that has come to us and had concerns about the rate increases and how they were going to pay for the Pioneer Home system. And the administrators have done an amazing job, and social workers, of really working with them and helping them understand what the payment assistance program is, and ensuring that everyone understands that there is a program set in place that's been there for many years that allows individuals to stay in the Pioneer Homes regardless of their ability to pay. We also, whenever we send out the notification of the rate increase going into effect at the end of July, we sent those notifications, and we also sent out application for the payment assistance program in case that was something that they felt that they needed to apply for.
Thank you. Senator Von der Paul.
Thank you. Just to kind of dovetail with Senator Geisel's question about medications being able to pay separately for medications, in this bill, does it allow the Pioneer Homes to also charge separately for supplies, equipment, and other services not included in the monthly rate?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, so the Pioneer Homes system, there's nothing in this bill that limits us from charging for supplies. Typically, so every elder that's in the home, if they're private pay, we send them an invoice for their previous month's supply use, and then just their co-pays for medication, because we have a central pharmacy. The majority of individuals use our central pharmacy, so we do bill them back for their co-pays. Supply charges are typically pretty minimal. Now, if you're on the payment assistance program, we do not charge you for your supplies. That's charged to your indebtedness account, because we know the individual doesn't have the means to pay for those supplies. And so all of this historically has been transferred to their state indebtedness account.
Okay, so through the chair, thank you. So I just want to make sure that we understand. Your comment was the supplies have been relatively minimal in the past. That's good to hear. You've heard stories about folks in the hospital and they get a $200 bill for an aspirin. I'm making this up, but the magnitudes have sometimes outstripped the value of the said product. So I guess I don't know what kind of checks and balances there can be other than the resident comparing one month to another month and saying, why are you charging me so much more for XYZ supply?
So through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, we actually charge cost on our supplies. On medications through the pharmacy, it's, I believe, and I would have to get these numbers getting back to you, but I think it's cost plus 3%. But on our supplies, we charge cost.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Senator Bagage?
Just a number of questions. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A number of questions just related to the earlier conversation, I think. First one, just really quickly, a comment Senator Geisel made was about, the burden. I brought this up last year in committee, but the burden that falls onto a couple if all the assets are acquired. Because it seems to me then the answer might be for I hate to say this, but divorce, to break the assets and to find ways to break the assets of somebody. And I can tell you honestly, I know people who are considering what their arrangements are going to be in terms of that now. Constituents have talked to me about that. Have you given that consideration? In terms of the current rates, the idea that it could actually break up families, has that been a consideration, and have you done anything with that? And then I have a few more questions, if I may, Mr. Chairman.
Through the chair, Senator Bagage. Yes, last year when we testified, we talked about how we tied the Pioneer Homes regulations closely to Medicaid waiver, because we know individuals typically, whenever they get in those higher levels of care, and in the Pioneer Home system, it's typically those level fours are the only ones that could potentially qualify for Medicaid waiver, that at some our experience has been at some point they end up requiring Medicaid waiver. And Medicaid waiver has set requirements, and if, as you remember in last year's rate increase regulation, we also increased the spousal support limit to tie that towards Medicaid to Medicaid's requirements for Medicaid waiver. So we increased that, and the Medicaid waiver resource limit is, I believe it's $132,000 to what the total amount of resources that an individual can have, an individual can have, or a couple, along with a family home. And so we try to tie them as closely to Medicaid waiver as possible in regulation.
A couple other questions. I brought up the question about the nursing home rates, and of course, I don't have the Genworth study in front of me, so I'm not sure why. I assume you've looked at that. And if you look at Representative Fields, page 9 in his presentation, using that average, it shows that those private nursing home rates are quite high. And I'm curious as to whether that's because of barriers to entry or something like that, that they just – is that arbitrary, or is that actually the cost of care for a nursing home? And how did that figure into your calculations for the original rates? Because that, of course, has merit in terms of our discussion as to whether or not this bill makes sense. So
through the chair, Senator Begich. So whenever we set our rates this last year, we set them based on what it cost the Pioneer Home System to provide services. So mm-hmm. if you remember, we had a $64 million budget last year, or in FY19, we spent just shy of $60 million. And whenever we set these rates and provided testimony last year, we demonstrated that cost was actually going to get us what we estimated would be about $60 million in FY20 to provide the services. And so that's where the rates were set. As for the GenWorth study, we've used this as historical data. It gives us, assisted living homes are not required to publish their rates in the state of Alaska, where nursing homes do, or skilled facilities do, in order to get their reimbursement from the state. They publish what it costs them to provide services. And that's how skilled rates, reimbursement rates, are set by the state of Alaska. Is on, they have to provide actual cost, their cost. And so it's been a little bit difficult to get those assisted living rates in the state. But we rely on the GenWorth data because they do that survey every year with their members. The limited data that we have received on assisted living facilities, typically you find them in the upper 5 to 6, and then they many times have add-ons for assisted living costs.
Mr. Chairman, but to be clear, I was talking about nursing home rates. If you look at that graph, that really is about the vast difference in nursing home rates, because assisted living looks like it's relatively calm, equal across the board. But the reason I'm asking that question is it can drive policy. So I was asking about the fiscal notes earlier, and I know we're not going into detail at this time on the fiscal notes, I guess, but but looking at the amount, I wanted to be sure that the fiscal note is reflecting what is the actual cost of care, as opposed to reflecting what is the what the care would be in a private facility that may or may not be accurately reporting. And again, I'm not one way or the other, I don't know the answer to the question whether they are or aren't accurately reporting their costs. But when I look at this, if you will, map, which is kind of what this graph is, map of services, it's caused me a little bit of concern about where we get to the fiscal note, though you've admitted that you're talking about a $60 million cost for the entire system. So this is a fiscal note not reflecting increased costs as a result of this bill, or is it reflecting increased costs as a result of this bill? Or is that just the Pioneer Home fiscal note that I'm looking at?
So through the chair, Senator Begich, that fiscal note of $62 million is the cost of providing services at the Pioneer Home system.
Great. That's really, I want to be clear that we all knew that this isn't, as a result of this bill, a new money that's going to be dropped on us, and because that can be a chilling effect on us. My last question.
Yes, Senator Begich.
The last question I have, just and it's a minor piece, but of course under this bill you wouldn't have to write regulations anymore. Under policy that the administration has adopted, we often reflect in our fiscal notes when writing regulations will cost us money. Does this bill, your fiscal note, reflect that reduction of costs that would otherwise come from having to write regulations? So let me repeat that just to be clear. Mm-hmm. Presently, the policy is that each department now writes in the amount of money it will cost them to write new regulations based on bills, which historically they had not done. But that is now put in any bill where we're asking for something new to be added. In this case, you wouldn't have to write regulations anymore. So is there a concomitant reduction in the fiscal note that reflects that reduction in expense that would occur in the department because you wouldn't have to write regulations?
Through the chair, Senator Begich, that cost was not calculated in. Most of the department's cost for writing of regulations is outside of the Pioneer Homes division. So it would be, our our regulation, the individuals that do most of the heavy lifting on writing the regulations are over either in Department of Law and over in the Commissioner's office. And so this does not reflect that.
Just for clarification.
So before, that's something that we can definitely get from the department on what the cost would be to write regulations. We can ask that question to the department and get an answer back to the committee members as well as Senator Begich.
Well, and just for clarification, because I'll be looking at that in all our bills that are presented when the department puts that cost in, you know, I just want it to be fair. If the department is going to be putting the cost into all of our legislation that we write, I want to be sure that they're, when we find ways to actually make their job easier, that they reflect the reduction in cost that would be. And that's all I'm asking, and I want to put that on the record. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I'm all about accurate notes. I've had many conversations with different departments upon the accuracy of cost and reduction of costs in legislation. Are there any other questions for Deputy Commissioner? Thank you for your time and availability today. With that, we're going to go ahead and open up public testimony. We'll start with the folks that have spent their time here in Juneau coming down to the Capitol building. We'll start with Mr. Brad Ryder. And for the record, if you can state your name and affiliation and plan about 2 minutes for your testimony. Use this thing.
My name is Brad Ryder, resident of Juneau. I've lived here since July of 1960. And I'll apologize ahead of time. I am a terrible public speaker, so you'll have to bear with me. I would like to thank all of you for taking the time to address this. There's nothing more important in this state. Brief history on myself is I grew up doing everything that we do in Alaska, hunting, fishing. I've worked in construction. I've done charters. I worked at the Harbor Department for Juneau for 17 years. Finished off with DOT for about 8 years with them. Wound up finishing off being the airport manager in Gustavus for a few years. My family came to Alaska on my dad's dream of what it offered. He's done the dream. He's had a world record king salmon he caught that is in his room at the Pioneers home. Both of my parents are in the Pioneers home. My mom, she was a gray lady at St. Anne's Nursing Home. She'd take me up there and help care for the elderly up there. Many years ago. When this rate increase went into effect, somehow or another, the way they refigure it with the five levels of care now, directly after it went into effect, my mother's rate went from just over $4,000, it went up to over $11,000, almost overnight. If my dad has another stroke. He had a stroke. He pulled out of it immediately. If he has another one, we're going to be at over $24,000 a month, and they'll get wiped out. I mean, that's just everybody. Everybody's going to do that. The Pioneers Home were never meant to make money. They were never designed to make money. They were designed to take care of our elderly people in Alaska, which, look at the Native people, the Indigenous people up here. When their elders get old, they catch their fish for them. They cut their firewood. They take care of them. To say we're not going to take care of our parents, our elderly, the way that it was intended, it's disgusting to do what these guys are doing. The Pioneers Home has been in their plans from day one, like many others, like everyone there. You can't give them 30 days notice and raise their rates and say, here you go. The people have sold their homes. They planned on this for many, many years. How far back do you go and you say, this is okay to do this? These people have been planning forever. And the state, I'm not even following my notes. Jeez.
Mr. You could wrap up your comments.
You want to, this may be off track. You want to give people thousands of dollars every year in the PFD, and you tell me what one of you, myself, anybody has done that the state owes us a paycheck at the end of the year, and they can't take care of their elderly. A few other things on here, but what we should be doing instead of destroying the Pioneers Home, that place is fantastic. We should be holding it up for the rest of the country to look at. Those guys are great, and the people in there are great. I apologize.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have Margie Beadle, followed by Doug Larson. And Margie, before you begin, I just want to give a reminder to folks. If you know 2 minutes is a short time, we're just trying to be respectful of committee time and trying to get through enough. But feel free to submit your comments in writing to senate.hess@akleg.gov, and we'll make sure those comments. And if you want to submit those, we'll keep testimony open until Wednesday, until the end of Hess on Wednesday, for folks to continue to submit written comment to the committee.
Thank you. My name is Margie Beadle, and I'm a lifelong Junoite. My mother, who has lived in Juneau for 70 years, currently lives at the Juneau Pioneers Home. And I want to thank you for hearing this bill so early in the session and for inviting testimony. So I followed this bill closely last spring, attending hearings and learning more about the issue and giving testimony in favor of the bill and watching it gain bipartisan support. I was quite hopeful with the outpouring of both legislative and public support, so I was surprised to learn last July that the department went ahead with the original plan to raise the rates. The rate increase, depending on the level of care, was anywhere between 40% and 140%. That is a sudden extreme increase which has left residents and their families reeling. I want to give you three anecdotes to illustrate what is happening now. First, as has been said before this afternoon, residents have moved out following the price increase. One resident in Juneau that I know of had been a private pay resident. Her family knew they could save money even with the cost to remodel their house for her wheelchair and pay for some respite care. Her semi-private room at the Pioneer Home was later filled with a new resident. I do not know if that resident is private pay or on Medicaid. I do not know if the new resident has greater needs. But if the resident is needier and on Medicaid, the cost to the state is greater than it had been with the original resident. Second, I know of two other private pay residents who are closely watching this issue. They are a married couple who has lived and worked in Juneau for over 50 years, one a nurse, the other a teacher, with longtime friends in Juneau. They'd like to stay here. One of them needs no extra care. The other is at level 3. They have already done their homework investigating assisted living situations down south where they know they can get more for their money. Third, my mother, as I said, lives at the Pioneers Home here in Juneau. She's a private pay resident currently on level 2 of the new 5-tier system, and her rate increased by 40%. Over a decade ago, she purchased private long-term care insurance. Before the Department of Health and Social Services raised the rates, her insurance covered her residential service rate and her room and board. After the increase, we have found that the maximum monthly benefit falls short by over $1,000 a month. That discrepancy will only increase as her needs increase. She's 90 years old and is in the middle stages of Alzheimer's disease. She worked until she was 87 because she enjoyed working and so that she could take care of herself. When she signed up for the Pioneers Home, she looked at the costs and the money she had set aside. And if this increase stays in effect, the situation my mother carefully planned for will have drastically changed. She was a businesswoman. She understands cost of living increases and how modest adjustments need to be made. She doesn't understand, nor do any of us, how this Pioneer Home community should be made to pay 100% of the costs and balance to balance the ledger when other parts of our Alaskan community are not held to the same standard.
You could wrap up your comments.
Okay. So I just offer these anecdotes to let you know that things are already changing, with more changes to the population of the residents in store if this bill is not enacted. And I thank you.
Thank you. We have Doug Larson, followed by Luann McVeigh.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Doug Larson. I'm a resident of Juneau, and I've been a lifelong resident of Juneau. Lived in other parts of the state, but mostly in Juneau. Like others that have spoken and that have brought forward information about the Pioneer Home issue, my folks came to Alaska in the 50s, early 50s, from other places. They met here. They got married. They had children. They had jobs. My father was in construction. My mother was a nurse. And they contributed to the state and to the community for all those years. Well, they were responsible. They wanted to be able, throughout their lives and into their later years, to be able to take care of themselves, take care of their families, take care of themselves. And so as part of that, they years ago invested in long-term care. And that long-term care, they had counsel on that, and they did it in cooperation with what the rates were that they would expect to pay, understanding that inflation happens, that was built in. And so when the changes came recently, it was pretty devastating. I mean, my father is in the Pioneers home now, along with Margie's mother and other classmates' parents. Interestingly, many of us that have school reunions now at the Pioneers home will someday, I assume, be the patients in there with our kids visiting us. But that sort of, as you see the progression, it becomes very, very real as you have parents in there. My dad's 92. He does have dementia. His rate went up 95%, which is a lot. I wanted to note that years ago, about 4 years ago, the legislature took on, and I know, Senator Giesel, you were very involved in this, the license fee increases for fishing and hunting. And I was very involved in that at the time. And at that time, the rates that were increased for hunting, for example, went from $25 to $45. For fishing, it was $24 to $29. I bring that up because I think it's indicative of what this legislature has focused on over the years, and that is we try to do what's right for our residents, and we try to not burden them with exorbitant costs. And I really appreciate that. I know many do. And in this case, I would hope that we would have the same sort of feeling towards it. Very quickly, as another aside, the university system was cut 40% last year. We all know that. Pretty devastating. It was corrected. Now we have a situation where it's going to be, as I understand it, decreased over time. It gives people a chance to wrap their arms around the issue and figure out a new strategy, a new plan for their lives. Many elderly people, my parents included, moving out of state now would be very difficult, and they don't want to, but even if they could, health-wise, it would be very difficult. So I would just say that, in summarizing, I think that there would be a more reasoned approach to senior care funding that would get implemented, and from what I've seen and understand of CSHB 96, I think that's a really good place. And I really appreciate, again, you taking this on early in the session. And like Brad said, I think this is an incredibly important issue for our state. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Luann McVeigh, followed by Judy Crudall? Crudall, okay.
Good afternoon, Chairman Wilson and committee members. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you. My name is Luann McVeigh, and I'm a retired Alaskan teacher. I came to Alaska in 1957 with my parents, who became career professionals with the federal government in Alaska. Both of them, now 87 years old, they still live in Juneau in the home they purchased in 1980. And although they live on their own, the challenges of aging impact their independence more and more as the years go by. And my sister and I visit our parents daily. We're checking on their medications and helping with their chores. Our parents are one major health event away from a serious life change. A fall, a broken hip, a stroke would require a permanent move to a long-term facility, and that would be catastrophic for all of us. Medicare does not pay for long-term care, and the inadequacy of their secondary insurance would make it very hard for them, as well as the obvious dearth of long-term facilities in Southeast Alaska. As residents of the state since territorial days, our parents consider themselves pioneers, and they always envisioned that they would spend their final years in the Pioneer Home, which those were meant to be affordable senior living facilities, but this administration has raised the rates of those Pioneer Homes to the point where even my parents, who receive federal pensions, cannot afford to move in there. We're bracing ourselves for severe financial hardship in that event. Please support Representative Fields' bill. This places reasonable limits on Pioneer Home rates, which will allow elders such as my parents to live there without fear of becoming destitute. They deserve it. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Judy. After Ms. Condell. Yes.
Judy Crondell. I live in Juneau.
Thank you, Judy. We have Laura Statz after you.
Very few seniors who are able to live in their own homes choose to live in the Pioneers home. It is the last home for those who need care in their last years. Our Pioneers homes provide a vital service for those who cannot care for themselves. They've been built and established first in recognition and appreciation of contributions made by Pioneers to the territory of Alaska, then to provide in-state alternatives to seniors of the state of Alaska who can no longer remain in their homes. While Pioneers homes provide high-quality care, they do not provide luxury accommodations. To charge luxury prices will only encourage seniors who can afford it to leave the state well before they cannot care for themselves. These prices will force the rest of us to spend all of our resources and liquidate our estates in order to move into a Pioneers home, depending on Medicaid when all other resources are depleted. I urge you to pass CSHB 96 from committee to prevent the drastic rate hikes and the devil's choices being forced on seniors by the governor. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Laura Statz, followed by Brian Daughtry.
Chair and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify today, and thank you for your service to Alaska. My name is Laura Statz. I live at 418 7th Street in Juneau. I'm a retired nurse, and I've been here since 1981, raising my family. My mother-in-law, Betty Doherty, is at the Juneau Pioneer Home. I am speaking on her behalf and the behalf of her six children. Betty is 98. Prior to coming to Alaska, she was a fifth-generation Californian. She ventured to Alaska in the 1940s after graduating from Mills College with a degree in science. She came partially because her great-uncle, Heckman, who had journeyed to Ketchikan, worked in the fishing industry and devised the fish trap. Betty taught high school after raising her six children, and as I said, is now in the Pioneer Home. Our family is for HB 96. As you know, in 2019, Mrs. Doherty's rate increased from $6,795, which she was at the equivalent of level four, and increased to $13,333. She is a private payer. She also had long-term long-term coverage, and which lasts 4 years. She has been at the Pioneer Home since 2011 and advancing to this level of care. Mrs. Doherty's her rate has doubled, essentially. I venture to say that this level of increase is greatly unfair, and I'm grateful for HB 96. Just to follow up, I believe that it's necessary for the state to find other revenue streams. I am highly in favor of a income tax, and I'm also in favor of the state using the permanent fund. So thank you again for your opportunity to testify.
Thank you. Next, we have Brian Daughtry.
My name is Brian Doherty, and thank you very much for your time and attention. And Laura was talking about my mom, and we're an old Alaska family. And you talk about going outside, and that's really not an option. We don't have any connections outside. You know, we've been here long enough that this is where we live. This is where my parents and my grandparents spent their lives when, you know, frankly, the Pioneer home out at Sitka was built when Alaska didn't have a pot to piss in. But at that time, despite resources, despite money, this place had a subsistence economy. We still took care of our elders. So in that sense, I'm here right now to appeal to your humanity, because you can't just talk numbers when you talk about people and their lives. You can't just talk about finances. I know why you are, and it's understandable, but you have to also think past that. When you have a population of 800,000 people, and you're talking about 500 beds, 500 people out of 800,000. Do I get that correct? Am I making the correct analogy here? 500 people out of 800,000, and the best that you can do is bankrupt them? 500 people, how many public schools have a population larger than 500? And what are their finances? And we don't think twice about supporting those schools, but our elders, many of them who helped build this state, my family certainly did. I could go through the history. The Heckmans started the fish trap industry. My father retired as Deputy Commissioner of Revenue, whatever. But that's not the point. The point is we have to rise up, take care of our elders, don't ask people to leave, and don't bankrupt a generation. You know, they didn't save their money just to lose it. You know, we as a family, my mom, we're self-pay. But think about being handed almost a $14,000 bill every month. Every month. We have to, you know, part of this is a national health crisis that, you know, this is front and center stage. You know, and I sympathize. It's a difficult thing. But bankrupting people or asking them to leave their beds is not an option, and we can do better. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
And our last person to testify for today will be Kevin Henderson. And for those, again, online, apologize we did not get through the rest of the committee time. We will make a little bit of time for continued testimony on Wednesday for the amount of folks that are left online. So, and if, remember, you can always send your comments to senate.hess.akledge.gov as well. Mr. Henderson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, committee, for allowing me to testify. My name is Kevin Henderson. I live in Juneau here. I have about 4 minutes of reading, but I promise I'm going to abbreviate it as I go. I'm here testifying on behalf of my wife, Janet Henderson, who's present here, and her mother, Beatrice Long. Beatrice is currently a Pioneer home resident here in Juneau, receiving services currently at level 2, and she is self-pay. Beatrice and her husband Nella moved up here in 1964, and they spent their life building. He was a contractor. He helped. He was a state inspector for a while, oversaw the ferry terminal at Auk Bay, oversaw the 1983 renovation of the governor's mansion as a building inspector for the state. They raised 4 kids here. Beatrice is now 93 currently. On behalf of Beatrice and the family, I do want to express my support for House Bill 96, and we ask, obviously, for your support for that as well. It does 3 things that are particularly important, and I'll abbreviate one. First of all, it recognizes that in Alaska, this is a huge state. Not very many people compared to states down south, and it was never going to be possible for this state to sustain for-profit, private, assisted living homes. And so they understood we need the Pioneer Home system to support our seniors, and that it was going to have to be subsidized by the state. That's what it's about. So this bill reinforces that, which is important. Secondly, last year, the governor took upon himself to decide that the original intent of the Pioneer Home, as I understood it, didn't seem to matter so much anymore, and that they should be completely self-funded. And, of course, as a result, we have these exorbitant rate increases that happened last fall, and that caused a lot of fear and panic, and I know you've heard all of these stories before, but we support House Bill 96 because it puts the payment rate and the additional charges in state statute where they belong. It will prohibit this and any future administration from raising rates based solely on their fiscal philosophy. If this bill passes, the increased rates in the future, and this is my main point, I'll submit the rest. When we have to discuss increased rates in the future, it will be in the legislature if this bill passes, where it is inherently a bipartisan process where there's multiple opportunities for testimony, and it won't be just so manipulated based on the philosophy of one administration at the time. Thirdly, we support this bill because it recognizes the fiscal realities of the state. Yeah, there is a state budget problem. There is a revenue problem. And this bill adds a 15% increase currently to what my mother-in-law would have. That's way more reasonable than 40% or 140%, depending upon what category. So we're okay with that. She's willing to participate and do her part to contribute to that. But it has to be reasonable. It has to be fair. It has to be humane. And so in light of that, this is good government. House Bill 96 is good government. It's a result of a righteous compromise. It recognizes the fiscal reality, and it honors our seniors all at the same time. So I encourage you guys to support 96. We're in support of it, and thank you for your testimony.
Thank you. Yeah. With that, we're going to set this bill aside and bring it back up on Wednesday to continue public testimony for about 20 minutes to allow the folks that did not have an opportunity online to call back and testify. We apologize again for those that waited through the committee and to hear this House bill before us. This concludes our business of the day. On Wednesday, we'll hear a departmental overview from Commissioner Adam Crum, and the committee will not meet on Friday. Are there any other committee comments? Senator Geisel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have a conflict of interest. My 92-year-old mother, who's lived here in Alaska for 71 years, lives in the Anchorage Pioneer Home. She's categorized as level 5 and is private pay. I do have a personal interest in the bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. With that, we are thanks to everyone for attending the meeting and coming out to testify. Brief ideas. And we will adjourn at 3:04. Thank you all for attending.